If you are new here for the first time, if you're joining us online, welcome to LifeBridge. We are pumped that we get to take a step forward today. It's been since March 8th. We thought it was going to be 2 weeks, not 8 months. But today, I'm excited that we just get to take a step forward. And so many things have happened in the world in the last 8 months, right? I mean, we had a global pandemic that has shut down the world. Who saw that one coming? I mean, the political scene is more divisive right now than it's ever been in my lifetime. There's so much racial and social unrest. I mean, our state has been on fire. And I could say, hey, you know, what else could happen? But we still have 2 months left in this year. I don't want to jinx this, right? Man, so much has happened. I don't need to list everything that's gone on in the world or what's going on in the world right now. But to say that this year has been a rough one, that'd probably be an understatement, right? It's been an understatement. And how's it been for you personally? I mean, his life just felt dark this year. Maybe you're wrestling with some anxiety because of your job. And you're not sure, hey, what's going to happen next? And maybe you've been struggling with your nerves have just gotten so frayed that you've just gotten so bent up with everything going on that you've gone deeper and deeper into anger. You, Mike, this stuff is going to happen. It's going to happen. Hey, if you're with us online, so. Maybe you've just gone deeper and deeper into something like drugs or alcohol or even pornography, anything to self-medicate with what's going on this year. You know, maybe you've got a secret that is just eating away at you and nobody else knows about it. I mean, every single one of us has been hurting at some point this year. We all have. Like, I've been hurting too. So I think the question that most likely we're all asking is there any hope? Like, is my life and is the world just going to keep getting darker? And I think there's two very specific answers to those two specific questions. Number one, yes. Yes, the world is going to just keep getting darker. It is. But number two, your life doesn't happen. Your life can get a whole lot brighter. That's what can happen. Thank you, sir. All right, can you hear me now? All right. Your life can get a whole lot brighter. Now, I think this is one of those years where we're all just looking for a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, like, can we just get through 2020? I can't wait till New Year's Eve. Can we just see a light at the end of the tunnel? But here's the thing. You don't need a light at the end of the tunnel if the tunnel's already lit up. All you have to do is turn the lights on. Let me explain. Even though this has been a rough and dark year, we have so much to be grateful for. We have so much to be grateful for. Well, let's just start with the obvious stuff. Number one, if you're in this room right now, if you're listening to this, you're alive. Like, you're alive, right? Yes, we can clap for that. By the way, we can clap for all kinds of things that we would want to and celebrate. Another thing. Character-shaping year. It's what it is. Every single challenge that we've all faced, as individuals and collectively as a group, every single challenge that we face or problem or pain point or suffering, everything that we've faced this year and moved through, that's a character-shaping moment. Resilience is getting built into us. I'm grateful for that. If you have food in your fridge, if you're in good health, if you have a roof over your head, and I know that's what our parents used to say to us when we were complaining, but they're right. Like, they're right. We have so much to be grateful for. Like, here in Colorado, we should be grateful for the snow that happened last weekend. That was God's grace. Like, we should be grateful for the men and women that are relentlessly fighting the fires, and many of them are a part of our church. We should be grateful that as a church, we've been financially generous to the fires, like I would expect us to be. We should be grateful that tomorrow morning or Tuesday morning, we get to vote. We have the right to vote for who represents us. That's we should be grateful for that. We should be grateful that we're gathering in this room right now. We should be grateful. Like, that's such a gift. And we should also be grateful for technology. Even if you're not physically in this room right now, you're still connecting with us here in Colorado, and we've got people all over the country and different parts of the world connecting with us right now. We have so much to be grateful. In fact, I stand by this. We have far more to be grateful this year than we do to complain about. And I know that might sound dumb in a year like 2020, but it's true, and here's why. When you can see, then you can be grateful. Once you can see, when you can see all the things that are going on around you, things in you, good things that have happened, things that are happening, things that will happen, when you can see those, you've got to be able to see it, then you can be grateful. But you can't see in the dark, can you? You got to have light or you won't be able to see. And this is where Jesus comes in. Now, I'm not sure where you're at with Jesus. Maybe this Jesus church thing, Bible thing, maybe this is all brand new to you. Or maybe you've been following Jesus for years. Or maybe you would consider yourself an agnostic or an atheist. It doesn't matter who you are or what your story is or where you're at. This story and these statements are for you. They're for me. So Jesus made these 7 incredibly bold and very controversial statements at the time he made them and who he made them to. These are 7 statements that ended up, people wanted to kill him for it. But there were 7 statements that not only changed the world, they can also change your life. But you either got to accept them or reject them. There's no in between. So Jesus had been accused and was being verbally attacked, and people were really starting to question, Jesus, who really are you? Who is this Jesus? So in John chapter 8, he stands up and he says this, all right, truly, truly, I tell you that before Abraham was, Abraham's a pretty important dude. He's a guy from the Old Testament, back in the book of Genesis. The Jewish nation and the Jewish faith come from Abraham. He's the founder, he's the father of that. Our Christian roots go all the way back up to Abraham. Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am. I am what? Did you forget to finish the statement, Jesus? That sounds a little bit weird. Your grammar's a little bit off. What are you talking about? I am. What is that? The Jews that he was talking to, they knew exactly what he meant. Jesus just claimed to be God. Now, sometimes you might hear somebody say that, you know, Jesus never claimed to be God. If you read through the New Testament, he never said, I am God. Maybe you've heard that before. That couldn't be further from the truth. That's exactly what he just claimed, and he claims it multiple times. Let me prove it to you. In Exodus chapter 3, way back then, God comes to Moses and calls Moses to go lead the Hebrews, to lead the Jews out of Egypt in the Exodus. And Moses says, okay, God, but when they ask me, what's God's name? What should I tell them? And God says this to Moses, tell them, I am sent you. That's my name, I am. Again, a little confusing. Like, why not just use one of the many names that are listed for God throughout the Bible? What, like, I am? Are we trying to be confusing here on purpose, God? What's the point of this? What does that mean? Let me explain it like this. God's telling Moses, he says, when people come and ask you, hey, who is the God that created all of this? Who's the God that created the beautiful Rocky Mountains where we live? Who's the God that created the oceans and the deserts and the forests and the plains? Who's the God that created all of this? I am. Who's the God that actually has the power to free us and forgive us? I am. When someone asks, who's the God that actually cares about me as an individual? Who's the God that actually loves me? I am. Who's the God that actually has some kind of truth? I am. When someone questions, who's the God that actually can save me and provide for me? God says, I am. God is sovereign over everything in the world, including the events of a year like 2020. The God that has love for every individual, no matter what their story or status is, that includes you and me. The God that has grace and truth for everyone. The God that has the power to save you, forgive you, and provide for you. God says, I am. Those two words are incredibly powerful. And they're the first two words in the Bible that God uses to describe himself. So when Jesus says to the Jews, before Abraham was, I am, they knew exactly what he meant, and their minds went immediately to Exodus chapter 3. Jesus just said, I'm God. I'm the one that actually spoke to Moses. I'm the one that you've been worshiping. I'm the one that you've been waiting for. And Jesus makes 7 more of these big I am statements throughout the book of John. And each time he gives a little bit more of a description about what he means and how that means for you and for me right now. 7 different times. And these are 7 statements that have changed the world, and they will change your life if you let them. So last week, Rick kicked us off and talked about the first I am statement in John and just did an awesome job. And if you missed any of that, I would encourage you to go to our website, check that out. Today, we're going to look at the second I am statement in John, and it's in John chapter 8. Let me set the scene like this. Jesus went to Jerusalem for one of the three major Jewish festivals that happened every single year. This was called the Feast of the Tabernacles. And it would happen every fall. It was a week-long party in Jerusalem where all of the Jews from all over the place would come to the city to party, to celebrate, to thank God that he had provided for them during the harvest and how he provided for them when they left Egypt. Massive party. And just like our parties, just like our traditions, there are ceremonies, there's traditions that we do. Anything that's a regularly scheduled event, man, we've got stuff that we do every single year. I mean, just think about the Olympics that were supposed to happen in August. You know, there's the opening ceremonies, right? Massive party to kick off the Olympics, huge deal. The same thing happened with the Jews in these festivals. Every single tradition that happened at this party, every single ceremony had a very specific purpose and meaning too. One of the most important, the biggest ceremonies was called the illumination of the temple. And this happened the very first night of the Feast of Tabernacles. And what happened was everybody would come into the temple courtyard. I mean, thousands of people would crowd into this courtyard. No social distancing whatsoever. Just all jam-packed in there, right? And here's what would happen. It's at night. It's dark. They would take these four massive torches, and they would stick them in the ground in the middle of the temple. Each one of these torches was about 75 feet tall. I mean, we're talking big. And at the very top of each one of them was kind of like a golden candle or a golden bowl, each one of them holding 65 liters of oil. It's a lot of oil. And then they'd light these bad boys on fire. Now, speaking of the Olympics, go back to that. Think about the opening ceremonies when they light the Olympic flame, you know, that part of the ceremony. Think that, except this was so much bigger. So they would light these 75-foot tall torches and people would go nuts, just go crazy. Music, dancing, singing breaks out. A massive worship service took place. Thousands of people jammed into this courtyard, worshiping now. These candles were so big, they lit up the entire temple. Some historical sources actually say that there was enough light to light up all of Jerusalem. I mean, that's a bright light. Now here's why, here's what they meant. The candles or the torches meant two different things. Number one, they were representing the pillar of fire that God used to lead the people out of Egypt. They're walking through the desert at night. God uses a big pillar of fire to lead them and guide them and show them the way. It was to remind them of that. The second thing it was to remind people that God promised to send the light, capital L, the light, the Messiah, into this dark and broken world. That's what it was all about. Jesus was there for all of that. He would have been right in the middle of all of this. He's part of the party. He sees the torches being lit. He's a part of this. God sent the light into the world and led us out of Egypt. God's gonna send the light back into the world. Jesus was right there for all of that. The next morning, he's back in the temple courtyard teaching again, which he kept doing. He did that over and over again. And all kinds of people surrounded Jesus to listen to him teach. Hundreds, if not thousands of people are there while he's teaching. And something happens. So the scribes and Pharisees, these guys were the religious leaders of the day. They bring a woman to him that was caught in the act of adultery. They caught her and they throw her down at Jesus' feet. And she's just laying in the dirt. Her head is hung so low that her hair is just kind of brushing through the dust. She's trying to use her hair to cover up the embarrassment as best she can. And these men, they've got these scowls of disgust on their face, and they're pointing a bony finger at her, and they look at Jesus and say, "We just caught her in the act. The law says that we should stone her right now." Some of the men, they've already got huge rocks in their hands. They're ready to hurl these at this woman. And just think about this. How does she feel? She just got caught in the act of adultery. And now this is in front of thousands of people. She's got her whole dirty laundry aired out in front of everybody. And her nose is getting rubbed in it. They're waiting to hear what Jesus says. "We just caught her, Jesus. It is an open and shut case. The law says that we should stone her right now. What do you say we should do, Jesus?" And every eye in that courtyard shifted from that shamed woman, and now every single eye is looking, staring right at Jesus. Thousands of people, but it is silent. You can cut the tension with a knife. Every ear is waiting to hear what Jesus does. What's he going to say? And he's weirdly calm. He's weirdly calm. You know, he knows that if he says, you guys know the law, do it. If he says that, she dies right at his feet, right then and there. But if he doesn't say that, he also knows that people are going to try to use this as a trap against him. So Jesus remains silent. And what's he do? He just squats down. Squats down, and he starts writing in the dirt. We don't know what he wrote. I really wish we knew exactly what he's writing in the dirt. But with his finger, just writing in the dirt. Still being quiet. Everybody's watching him. Everybody wants to know what he's going to say. Nobody's more eager than this woman right next to him. What's he going to say? And he just keeps writing. Doesn't say a word. So the Pharisees say it again. Hey, Jesus, maybe you didn't hear us. Like, what should we do with this woman? What should we do with her? What should we do with this sinner? You know what the law says. He doesn't say anything. So they ask again, and they ask again, and they ask again. And finally, Jesus stops writing, and he just brushes off the sand. And he stands up. And he says, anyone who's without sin, throw the first stone at her. And nobody knows how to respond. Because they know that Jesus just dropped the mic. I really could drop the mic right now. So one by one, slowly, they start dropping their stones and leaving. And then after a few moments, this woman slowly raises her head in confusion and in disbelief, and she's just looking around. She's just waiting to get hit with the first rock. All she's wondering about is, hey, what's going to hurt more? Is it going to be the physical pain, or is it going to be the emotional pain I'm feeling right now? And she looks around, and that's not happening. And she looks up at Jesus, and Jesus says to her, where are your accusers now? And he helps her up. She says, didn't anyone condemn you? And she says, no, Lord. And Jesus says, well, neither do I. Go and sin no more. Can you imagine how she felt? Like, that had to have been the darkest moment of her life, right? To get caught cheating on your spouse, then drug outside in front of thousands of people. So now everybody knows about it while they rub your nose in it, thinking she's expecting to be killed for it, because that's what the law said at the time. Can you imagine how dark that moment was for her? What did that feel like? And then the only person that talks to her says, I don't condemn you. Who happens to be God, I don't condemn you. Jesus gives her grace. He says, I forgive you. And then he gives her truth too. He says, now I want you to go and sin no more. Don't go back to this darkness anymore. Hear me on this. Everyone else might condemn you for your dark moments. Like, those might be things that have happened to you, things that you have done, or maybe it's something that you're struggling with and nobody else knows about it. Everybody else might condemn you for your dark moments, but Jesus does not. And then he really gets going. He's about to make his big statement here. So remember, there's thousands of people around, so he's got to be loud. He stands back up and he says, I am the light of the world. Right after he does this with this woman, I am the light of the world. Anyone who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. There it is. Like, did you catch it? The I am statement? I am the light of the world. He's saying this in front of everybody in the courtyard. He's saying this right underneath those four torches that were burning just the night before. The four torches that were to remind everybody that God led his people out of the desert with a pillar of fire. The four torches that were a reminder that God was going to send the light, the Messiah, into this dark and broken world. Everybody is still thinking about that. That is fresh on everybody's minds. This is not a coincidence. Jesus' timing is perfect. And under all of that, he says, I am the light of the world. These torches, they're about me. I was the pillar of fire that led Israel through the desert. I am the God, the light that you have been waiting for. I am the light. And when he says that, I think it's so cool, his timing. He says, I am the light, right after he forgives the darkest moment of some woman's life. Because of Jesus, her darkest moment became her brightest. Because that's exactly what light does. Light does not just illuminate, light eliminates darkness. It eliminates it. Sin only brings darkness. That's all that it brings. Grace only brings light. That's the only thing that it brings. She went from dark to light. She went from death to life. That's what Jesus does. And he says the same thing to you and the same thing to me. Bring me your dark moments. I don't care what they are. Bring me your dark moments and I will forgive you. I will give you grace. I will not condemn you. Don't go back to sin. Don't run back to that darkness, but I don't condemn you. And Jesus says, I'm the only one that can do that. Only the light can do that. And I will do that for you if you let me. If you let me. And we all want and need light, right? Like, who doesn't want light? I mean, we live in a really dark world, and every single one of us, I know that you have, at some point in your life, maybe you're experiencing right now, you have felt and experienced darkness. I have. You felt darkness in your life. There's a brokenness or an emptiness. There's something missing. Or you're just caught up in a secret habit. Or there's sin that's just kind of eating away, or destructive behavior, or division, or discouragement, whatever. You felt darkness before. Like, even if your life is awesome right now, like, even if you're just killing it. Man, my relationships are great. What are you talking about, Matt? Business is good. I got money in the bank. My kids are great. My friends are good. School's awesome. My job is fantastic. Me and my wife were great. Man, what are you talking about? There's no darkness in my life right now. But I bet something feels like it's missing still, doesn't it? There's something missing. That's part of the darkness. So every single one of us, we're all gonna walk through this life. We are, like, we're walking through the world. My question is, do you wanna walk in darkness or do you wanna walk in light? Every single one of us, we've got a choice. Like, you have a choice. You can walk through this world. You can walk through this life with your proverbial arms stretched out, just trying to feel your way through the darkness. Or you can walk with clear vision through light. Like, which one do you want? The choice is yours. But the choice isn't about darkness or light. The choice is about Jesus. Do you want to follow him as Lord and Savior? And if you're a Christian already, it's still a daily choice to follow him or follow something or someone else. Like, depending on who or what you're following is gonna give you an indication if you're living in the light or you're in the darkness. Again, if you're struggling with all those things I listed earlier, that's a sign of darkness. The reason why the world looks so dark, the reason why it always seems like it's getting worse, is because the world's not following Jesus. Never has. You know, when people wonder, man, why is it just gonna keep getting worse? Why does the world seem like it's getting worse every single year? There's no secret. It's because the world's not following Jesus. It's that simple. So look at your life and it's gonna be a good indication. If you're living in darkness or you're feeling that emptiness or the destruction or pain of something that you just can't shake, or there's secret sin or habits that are just kind of eating away at you. I mean, there's so many things that are an indication of darkness. That's just an indication that you're not following Jesus. You're following someone or something else. You want to keep doing that? And if you already are a Christian, man, I want to clear this up. I hit this a lot, and we're going to keep doing this because I think somewhere in Christian theology in the United States, at some point, we decided to teach, maybe intentionally, maybe not, that once you follow Jesus, maybe we just give this impression. Once you follow Jesus, your life's going to be great. You're not gonna have any pain. See, I hear some of you laughing, right? You know what I'm talking about. Your life's gonna be great. You're not gonna have any struggles anymore. It's gonna be rainbows and butterflies from here on out. Please hear me right now. That's a flat out lie. It's not true. It's not true. And if we didn't say that, we wouldn't be caring about you at all. I mean, just look at Jesus. God went through some rough stuff here on earth. Read through scripture. You're gonna see people that follow Christ, they went through some tough stuff. Just because you follow Jesus, that does not mean a get out of jail free card from pain or suffering or tough times. It's gonna happen. But what it does mean is that when you experience pain in life, it won't lack purpose. When you go through tough things, you're gonna know who's leading you and you can trust him. He's gonna light the way for you. When you follow Jesus, you will still have a peace and a joy that surpasses all the dumpster fires of life like 2020. And let me just say something that is not groundbreaking at all, okay? You're going to have so much stuff thrown at you in life, right? Everybody knows that. Let me remind you. You're going to have challenges and obstacles and suffering and pain. You're going to have successes and good times. You're going to have failures. You're going to have disappointments. You're going to have so many things thrown at you in life. That's going to happen. My question is, do you want to walk in darkness when those things are being thrown at you? Or do you want to walk through all that stuff with light? Jesus says, I'm that light. I'll let you see. I'll lead you. And just think about what darkness and light actually do. Light lets you see. Darkness keeps you blind. That's obvious, right? If it's light out, you can see. I have lights in my face right now. I can see every single one of you, right? And with those masks on, you can make really weird faces at me, and I have no idea about it. So knock yourself out. When it's dark, you can't see. This is obvious. But at the same time, you don't have to go looking for light. If there's light, you see it. This is kind of what Jesus was getting at when he said, you will have the light of life. Not just walk in it, not just be led by it, not just be able to see, you're going to have it, you're going to possess it. Like one of my favorite things that we do at Christmas Eve is the candle lighting. Now what we do is, if you've never experienced that before, is during one of our songs, every single person here will be given a candle and will light all of those candles. And it's a symbol. It just looks awesome to have the whole room lit up with candles. I love it. And every single Christmas Eve, I wonder, is this going to be the Christmas Eve where my kids light their hair on fire? Is this going to be the year? Like it's in 2 months. I'll let you know what happens in January. It looks awesome, but there's a lot of meaning behind it too. First is, it's to represent that the light came into the world. Jesus came into the world. But it also represents that every single one of us is holding a candle, symbolizing that you have the light. You possess it. It's not just something you see. You have it right now. And you're supposed to share it. Not just see it, not just walk in it, but share it. So what we do is, you get your candle lit, and then you light the person next to you. And they light the person next to them. And they light the person next to them. And within 2 minutes, this entire room is lit up with candles. Our job, if you have the light, is to share it. And that's one of the ways that we introduce people to Jesus and lead them in their next step with him, right? Here's another thing. Light exposes, darkness hides. I mean, in Colorado, we love our sunshine. Do we not? We love the sunshine here, right? We talk about how we have 300 plus days of sunshine every single year. We're not apologetic about that at all. In fact, I like being obnoxious about that to other people that live in different states. It's awesome here, right? And think about all the things that grow because of it. You go into the mountains, you see, so many beautiful trees and wildflowers and plants, and the list goes on and on and on because we have light, we have sunshine. That's why that stuff grows. But think about the opposite. Nothing good grows in the dark. I think about what grows in the dark. Mold, fungus, not good things grow in the dark. I mean, and do you have things in your life right now that act like mold or act like fungus that are growing because you keep them in the dark? I mean, the longer you let things that are a mold or a fungus grow in your life and you keep them in the dark, the more harmful they're going to become to you and other people. Sin may be private or personal, but it is never private. It will get out. I mean, just in your house, if you know that your house has mold and you're the only one that knows it and everybody else is in your house, what happens? Eventually, everybody in your house gets sick because of the mold, even though they never see it. But what happens when light exposes those things? Mold, fungus, they struggle. And that's what Jesus is getting at. He's like, hey, bring that stuff out to me. I'm going to heal it. I'm going to help healthy and beautiful things grow in its place. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about it at all. Light exposes, darkness hides. Nothing good grows in the dark. But there's more good news with that. Here's another thing. Light makes you feel safe. Darkness keeps you scared. I mean, people are afraid of the dark. That's a real thing. Kids are afraid of the dark, and some of you are too, adults. Like, don't lie. You just are, right? It's okay. Like, some things are creepy. Like, if you're alone by yourself in a really dark place, it can be creepy, right? But nobody's really afraid of the light. Nobody's afraid of the light. The only people that are afraid of the light are people that feel like they have something to hide. If you feel like you have something to hide, the light is not your friend, is it? But this is the really good news with Jesus. You don't have to hide anything. There's no condemnation. There's grace. There's forgiveness. There's also truth. I mean, he's already proved that with the woman that got caught. There's plenty of things that we feel like we have to hide. Adultery in this story. Man, people feel like they have to hide adultery. It doesn't mean that there aren't consequences and pain that are attached to sin. It just means there's no condemnation when you bring it to Jesus. He proved that. He gave her grace. He gave her forgiveness. And then he says, don't go back to the mold. Don't go back to the darkness. Go and sin no more. Hear me on this. Only when you bring something into the light can you be freed and forgiven of it. Only when you bring something into the light can you be freed and forgiven from it. One more. Light draws people to it. Darkness isolates people. People that have the light of Jesus draw people. I mean, because who doesn't want to be around somebody that's loving and always joyful and peaceful to everybody that they're around, who's kind and good to other people, who's faithful to what they say and do, who is gentle in a very aggressive world, who can always control themselves? I want to be around people like that, and I know you do too. People that have the light, people that share the light, and people that live in the light draw people to Jesus. It's that simple. Man, it's something that I want everybody at LifeBridge to be described as, is when people see us and people meet you, the reaction is, maybe they don't articulate it this way, the reaction is, man, that person's been with Jesus. I love that. I'm seeing many of you right now in this room that when I've been with around you for just a few minutes, I can tell right away, that person's been with Jesus. And I know there's many of you online right now the same way. When people are around you, they can tell that you've got the light. I want people to describe me, even if they can't articulate it this way, I want people to describe me as someone, that guy's been with Jesus. When you have the light of Jesus, when you possess it, not just live in it, not just walk in it, but when you possess it, other people will see it and they will be drawn to Jesus. Darkness though, mold, that just repels. That's all it does. Darkness divides, darkness destroys, darkness isolates people. So tough question right here. Do you draw people to Jesus or do you push them away? Which one is it? This church better be, it has been for years, and it better be going forward, a church that draws people to Jesus, not pushes them away. And the only way that happens is if you have the light. Are you walking in it? Do you see by it? Do you have it? I mean, the list goes on and on, but you get the point. Walking in darkness, living in darkness, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what's going on, it doesn't matter what happens in your past. Walking in darkness, living in darkness is 100% optional. It's optional. It's your choice. Do you want to walk in that? Do you want to live in that? Or do you want to walk and live in light? And remember, if you're a follower of Jesus, it is a daily choice to follow him, to follow his light, to possess it and to share it with others. Man, this year has been rough, but you don't have to look for a light at the end of the tunnel because of Jesus. If you have Jesus, you can just turn the lights on to the tunnel. It's that simple. The choice is yours daily. So a couple quick steps. Maybe what are some steps? Number one, man, if you're ready to follow Jesus, you can text this number that's on the screen right now. One of our pastors will reach out to you right now. Do you want to talk through some stuff, ask questions? Man, you can have that light now. Or maybe something else. Like, if you want to know Jesus and follow his light, man, you got to be in his word. You got to know this. So jump into this. Man, my daily time in the Word is the best part of my day. It's the best part of my day. It gets even better when Kelly does it with me. That's awesome. You've got to make time for it, but maybe it's rough for you right now, or maybe you're intimidated by this and don't know where to start. How about this? Start in the book of John and just for 3 minutes a day, three times a day, hey, this for 3 minutes right now, I'm going to read 5 verses in the book of John. And then at a different time in the day for another 3 minutes, I'm going to pray about whatever I'm struggling with, whatever I'm thinking about, or whatever I need to ask God, or whatever I'm thankful for, just 3 minutes. And then another 3 minutes later in the day, just be quiet. I like quiet moments in the day. That's pretty awesome, right? Just be quiet and reflect on it. Think about what you read. Think about what you're praying about. Just start there. Just start small, taking those steps to not only have the light, but to walk in it. God's word will let you walk. It helps you walk in it. The light came into the world. There is no more darkness. if we grab a hold of it. So not only walk in the light this week, but as a church, let's be that light for other people. Let's share it with other people. Let me pray for us. Jesus, thank you for coming into the world. Thank you for being light in such a dark, dark place. Man, my request is that you would just show us what it means to walk with you, that you would show us the way, then you would show us what it means to have you as the light, and that other people would notice it in us, that our lives would be a transforming mechanism for others. They would want what we have, and what we have is you. We love you. Thank you so much for today. You are faithful, and we're so excited for the next step forward. We're following you, and where you go, we will go. We won't move without you. Keep moving, Jesus. We love you. It's in your precious name we pray. Amen.